Reading may be the last secretive behavior that is neither pathological nor prosecutable. It is certainly the last refuge from the real-time epidemic. For the stream of a narrative overflows the banks of the real. Story strips its reader, holding her in a place time can't reach. A book's power lies in its ability to erase us, to expand or contract without limit, to circle inside itself without beginning or end, to defy our imaginary timetables and lay us bare to a more basic ticking. That from Richard Power's introduction to a new anthology that collects works to read on the sly when you're engaged in something else. Powers writes about the press of time in our lives and how reading allows us to manipulate it. The anthology is called The Paris Review Book for Planes, Trains, Elevators, and Waiting Rooms, a treasure for readers on the run. If you carry reading with you like a security blanket, give us a phone call. Where do you find stolen moments to read? In transit? In the bathtub? What reading do you always carry with you? Are there certain genres or authors you save for bedtime or for long plane rides? Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now from our bureau in New York is Bridget Hughes. She's executive editor of the legendary literary magazine, The Paris Review. She co-edited the new book, The Paris Review Book for Planes, Trains, Elevators, and Waiting Rooms. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thanks for having me.
So how did you develop the idea for this book, to arrange stories by their length?
Right. Well, I wish I could take credit for it. It was actually one of the other editors who was on the train coming to work one morning and sat down, pulled out his book, as he does every day, and looked around and realized that most of his fellow passengers were doing the very same thing. And a light went off in his head, and I think he realized that this is when people do their reading these days. I don't know that they set aside time to read, but they sort of sneak in moments here and there. And he thought that this would be a perfect way to organize an anthology and to collect some of the wonderful fiction and poetry that we've published in the magazine over the years.
So describe the structure of the book, and how did you choose which authors go in which sections?
Well, it's divided into four chapters: planes, trains, elevators, and waiting rooms. And each chapter has work of various lengths. So the elevators chapter is a series of one-page poems for that short ride. And waiting rooms has three novellas for the half-hour wait at the doctor's office. And as for how we decided what to go in there, there is a wonderful archive of material from 50 years of publishing fiction and poetry. And we all sat down and read through old issues and found favorites and discovered pieces that we had maybe forgotten about, and argued and debated and eventually came up with what is in this book that just came out.
Well, again, we want to hear where you listeners sneak your time to read. 800-989-8255. And Rosemarie joins us from Suffolk, Virginia.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
I am sitting here waiting for the school bus to drop my daughter off from summer school. And in my hand, I am reading The Pleasure of My Company by Steve Martin. And I try to read all the time, so I always have a book in my purse or in my car, and I do the same with my children. And it's wonderful because I get to not just read the books that I have to read for my book club, which we read one book a month, but also other books that people have suggested that I should read or that I may like.
Well, Rosemarie, we're glad you took a radio with you as well.
It's always with me, and I like to plug in our National Public Radio station, where we are a member.
Well, thanks very much for that. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Rosemarie. I wanted to ask you, Bridget, is this idea of stolen moments really at the heart of all of this?
Yes, I think it is. In what way do you mean?
Well, the idea that we all sneak away to read something, whether in jobs drearier than the one I have now, the bathroom was my refuge.
Right. Well, there's a great quote from Walker Percy that Richard Powers mentions in an interview we did with him a few years ago, and he says there's a great deal of difference between an alienated commuter riding a train and the same commuter reading a book about an alienated commuter riding a train. And I think that was sort of the theme and the idea of the book, that we would make these moments more interesting, those in-between moments.
Here's some emails from listeners about when they sneak time to read. Michael Casey in Queens, New York says, on the New York City subway during my commute. Janine says, where do I find the time to read? I work full-time, take classes, and as a mother of three boys under the age of four, I can only find time to read in the restroom, the old refuge there. And Charles Mitchell, here's an interesting comment I found in the writer's quotation book. I am sitting in the smallest room in my house. I have your review in front of me. Soon it will be behind me. Seems to me many of us do quite a bit of reading in the smallest room of the house. So I think there's a couple of votes for that. Let's bring Rick Moody into our conversation. He's a novelist whose most recent book was a work of nonfiction, The Black Veil. His short story, The Mansion on the Hill, is in the waiting room section of the Paris Review's new anthology, and he joins us from Long Island in New York. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks, Neil. Nice to be here.
And do you think a waiting room is an appropriate venue for the reading of your story?
Actually, I feel really honored to be in the waiting room section because, you know, sometimes, especially in New York City, you can spend an awful lot of time in those waiting rooms. The doctors can be furiously late. And so it affords one a chance to really get into a longer story, and hopefully my story has some narrative to it so people could really, you know, sink in and enjoy themselves in that setting.
Oh, I think the waiting room, you're absolutely right. The classic waiting room of my experience in my time in New York City was after being drafted for jury duty. And being asked to wait in that, and I had a huge doorstop of a history book that I was anxious to read and knew that week on jury duty I would have more than enough time to pursue Samuel Eliot Morrison in complete detail.
That's right. Tolstoy is good for jury duty, I think.
Maybe the Paris Review can get onto that. When do you steal your moments for reading?
You know, I think the guy who said he read on the subway, that's really true for me, that actually I get a ton of reading done on the subway in the city, and I can sometimes ride the subway two or three times in a day since I don't actually have to go to the office like other people, and so I've done a lot of reading on the subway over the years.
And do you have, do you save guilty pleasures for reading on the subway?
No, I don't actually. I don't have that many readerly guilty pleasures. Actually, I like to read, you know, big, heavy literary books a lot of the time. Sometimes in summer, if I'm feeling really especially hedonistic, I'll read a biography or, you know, the story of Led Zeppelin or something like that. But I don't ever read mysteries, for example.
Let's get another listener on the line. Ashton is with us from Denver, Colorado.
Yes.
Hi, you're on the air, Ashton.
Hi. I read science fiction, mostly science fiction fantasy, and I always have a new book with me. I try to get the paperback so I can keep them in my back pocket. And I read whenever I can, in lines, on the subway, like everybody else. But what everybody seems always to find so incredulous is I actually read while I'm walking.
I'm amazed. You can actually do that?
You know, it slows me down. I don't get anywhere quickly, but yes.
Don't you ever find yourself tripping over a root or stepping off a curb unexpectedly?
No, not really. You have to glance up every once in a while, but, you know, not so much that you can't stay in the story.
I guess glancing up every once in a while is not a bad attribute to have to do if you're reading science fiction. Thanks.
Certainly not.
Thanks very much for the call, Ashton.
Thank you.
We're discussing a new book called The Paris Review Book for Planes, Trains, Elevators, and Waiting Rooms. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. Shirley is with us from Chagrin Falls, Ohio.
Hi.
Hi.
I have to tell you that your question made me laugh so hard. I have been a voracious reader all my life. I am actually in the parking lot of the library, if you can believe it, going in to check out some books. But when I was a kid, I used to hide in the summertime on the ledge of the front porch where the railing met the pool that held it up, because no one could see me, obviously, until they discovered I was there. And I could do all my reading all summer long and get out of my chores, which I was supposed to do, until someone actually found me. So that was my favorite reading place when I was a kid. I have passed it on so that my daughter, when her children were young, used to hide in the bathroom when the boys were little so they wouldn't hear her, wouldn't know where she was. My grandson, who's now 14, keeps a quilt over his head at night and an itty-bitty book light attached to his book so that he can read when he's supposed to actually be sleeping. So it's kind of like a family tradition, I guess, and it just made me chuckle to hear your question.
It's interesting. The itty-bitty book light replaced it. When I was a kid, I had next to my bed at night when I wasn't supposed to be up and reading an illuminated globe, but to get enough light to read, you had to spin it so the Pacific was shining down on your book. If it was Europe, you couldn't possibly have enough light to read.
Wasn't it distracting as you were reading?
No. It was fine. It was fine. I've read a lot of books that way. Shirley, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And Rick Moody, it's interesting that if you have children, once you understand that they have caught that whatever it is, that virus, that infectious reader virus, you know they're going to be all right.
Yeah, it's true. You know, I don't have kids of my own, but I'm staying with my niece and nephew right now, or they're visiting with me. And my nephew yesterday said, I need some books. I need something good. Get me something good. So I went up to the, room where all my books are and unloaded four or five paperbacks for him. And he actually was late to dinner because he had already dived in and started reading one of these books. And I had this very thought, how exciting that another generation is getting the bug.
And Bridget Hughes, I meant to ask you the story about the young man who tucked the science fiction novels in his back pocket. Paperbacks were first designed as, you'll excuse the expression, pocketbooks.
Right. Well, that's what I'm hoping that people will do with this book. Keep it in their glove compartment or the back pocket and pull it out every now and then for a quick dip into a story or a poem.
They'll need a generous back pocket. It's a pretty thick book. So let's get another caller on the line. Pat is with us from Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Hi there.
Hi.
I was just listening to your show. I read all the time. I take a book with my backpack with me to work all the time and read at lunch. When I was younger in junior high and high school, I used to read on my 10-speed on the way to school.
You're crazy, Pat.
Well, people told me that.
You're lucky to be alive, too.
As long as you stay on the sidewalk, and like the guy said, when you're walking, just look up every once in a while.
Were you reading, Dostoevsky? Or?
Mostly science fiction, fantasy, sometimes biographies. Just really depends.
Okay. Thanks very much for the call, and ride safely, Pat.
Okay.
I love science fiction, but I think we're seeing a pattern here. Rick Moody, let me ask you, before you found your story listed in the waiting room section of the Paris Review book, had you ever given much thought to where people read your books?
No, actually, I've had this conversation before with my wife and others, wherein I've asked if anyone has ever seen someone reading my book on the subway, which I never have. And there's an apocryphal story I've heard about a New York writer where he saw someone reading his book on the subway, and he went over and he sat down next to her and he tapped her on the shoulder and he said, "That's my book." And the woman sort of looked up at him as anyone would do, interrupted on the subway in the act of reading, and glared at him and went back to reading. And he tapped her on the shoulder again and he said, no, really, that's my book. At which point the woman looked up and said, "If you don't leave me alone, I'm going to call the cops."
I thought you were going to say, "Here's the receipt. I paid $19.95 at Barnes & Noble's."
But I keep wishing that I would find someone reading my book on the subway, but so far I've been thwarted in that.
That would be an ultimate kind of vindication in a way.
Market penetration, Neil.
Market penetration, that's what it's all about. Well, maybe this time as you'll start hanging out in waiting rooms to see if people are reading your story.
Yeah, that would be great.
Thanks very much for being with us today. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Rick Moody is a novelist. His most recent book is a work of nonfiction, The Black Veil. His short story, The Mansion on the Hill, is in the waiting room section of the Paris Review's new anthology. And would also like to thank Bridget Hughes. Appreciate your time today. Yes, Bridget Hughes was with us from our bureau in New York. She's executive editor of the Paris Review. And again, the full name of the book is The Paris Review Book for Planes, Trains, Elevators, and Waiting Rooms. I'll take it on vacation, for which I am headed instantly. Lynn Neary will be in this chair on Monday. Ira's here tomorrow with Science Friday. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.